We're less than a week into a new year. And already many of us face one of two temptations. The first temptation is to break and bury, never to mention again, those naive, short-sighted, misguided, unrealistic resolutions we made just a few days ago. We're not even going to talk about it, not even going to think about them until this time next year. They're pointless. We've already blown it. Just forget about them. The second temptation, very different from the first, is that some of us may be tempted at this point to begin to publicly brag about how well we're doing with the good habits we're forming less than 1 week into a 52-week year. We're already excited about what we've accomplished. Tis the season to share a post-workout sweaty selfie. Or even better, a post-workout sweat angel. Nothing says I worked out really hard than leaving a trace of my DNA in a puddle of sweat on a gym floor somewhere. Or maybe it's time for you to show us a picture of the first plate of vegetables you've eaten in the last month. Or share with us, please do, share with us that inspiring quote from the first paragraph of the first chapter of the first book you intend to read this year. And you're 1 week into the new year and you're halfway through the chapter. Keep reading, and please do check in with us later when you actually finish the book. But before you begin to go public with all the positive changes in your life, maybe you want to pay attention to this wisdom from Epictetus. He was a famous late first century Stoic philosopher. This is what he said to those who would pay attention to what he had to say. He said, when you have accustomed your body to a frugal regimen, don't put on airs about it. And if you only drink water, don't broadcast the fact all the time. And if you ever want to go in for endurance training, do it for yourself and not for the world to see. So Epictetus was warning others about the danger, how easy it is for a newly developed virtue to become a vice. That as we begin to make progress in important areas of our life, that can become then a source of self-congratulatory, self-promotional, self-righteous pride. And Epictetus said, be careful. Don't go public with all the good you're doing just so others will be impressed. Decades earlier, Jesus made a similar warning to his disciples. Epictetus's was about self-improvement and physical fitness, but Jesus gave a similar warning to his disciples in Matthew 6 in the Sermon on the Mount. And this has to do with how they practice their religious acts of devotion, what Jesus calls righteousness. Listen carefully to the words of Christ. Be careful. Be careful not to practice your righteousness in front of others to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So, when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and on the streets to be honored by others. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. So when you give to the needy, do not let your left hand know what your right hand is doing, so that your giving will be in secret, and then your Father, who sees what is done in secret, will reward you. When you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners, to be seen by others. And truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. But when you pray, go into your room, close the door, and pray to your Father who is unseen, and then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. And when you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their reward in full. So, when you fast, put oil on your head. Wash your face so that it will not be obvious to others you're fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And then your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. Be careful, Jesus says, not to practice your righteousness in front of others. Righteousness is a key word in the Sermon on the Mount. It's a key word in the Gospel of Matthew. And the way it's used in the Gospel of Matthew, the way Jesus uses it in his teachings in Matthew, is to refer to behavior that conforms to the will of God. It's a little bit different the way Paul uses it in his letter, like in the letter to the Romans. When Paul talks about righteousness, sometimes he talks about a legal standing or status or a verdict pronounced by God, the judge. But that's not really the way Jesus uses it in the Gospel of Matthew. In Matthew, righteousness is about, more than anything, behavior. Behavior that conforms to God's will, and it's all-encompassing behavior. It's external and internal, so that Jesus says in Matthew 5, yeah, you shouldn't kill people, don't murder. But he also says, don't harbor anger in your heart toward other people either. It's external and internal. It's a kind of righteousness that is holistic. Here's one way to say it. We could say that when Jesus says righteousness in the Sermon on the Mount, he's talking about doing the right thing, right action, in the right way, at the right time, because timing matters. You can mess everything up with poor timing. It's doing the right thing in the right way, at the right time, for the right reason. And it's this last bit that Jesus emphasizes in this section of the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew 6. From God's perspective, Jesus says that the motive, the reason, the heart behind the religious act, the righteousness, the right thing, no matter how good or right it is, the heart and the motive and the reason behind the act is just as important as the act itself. God pays attention to the heart. This helps explain why Jesus has a problem with a brand of righteousness practiced and promoted by the Pharisees. Earlier in Matthew 5, Jesus told his disciples that unless your righteousness surpasses that, exceeds that, goes deeper than that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. In other words, Jesus is saying their righteousness isn't enough. There's something lacking. There's something wrong with their rightness. And part of Jesus' problem with their righteousness is their motives. Later on in Matthew 23, when Jesus blasts the Pharisees and the religious leaders for their hypocrisy, he says, chapter 23, verse 5, everything they, talking about the religious leaders, the Pharisees, everything they do is done for people to see. They make their phylacteries wide and the tassels on their garments long. They love the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. They love to be greeted with respect in the marketplace and to be called rabbi by others. Everything they do, he says, is to be seen by others. And so back in Matthew 6, Jesus gives three specific examples out of first century Judaism, three religious acts of devotion, righteous acts, giving to the poor and the needy, prayer and fasting, abstaining from food. He gives those three examples. And then he warns his disciples about practicing them in such a way so that they are to be seen, wanting to be seen by others, because Jesus says, that's how the Pharisees do it. And he calls them hypocrites. Uses the word multiple times. Originally, the word hypocrite referred to an actor wearing a mask on a stage in order to play a character. There's nothing negative or pejorative about the term. It's just someone wearing a mask to play a character. But over time, the word hypocrite became negative and pejorative, so that a hypocrite is someone who pretends to be something they're not. Normally, by saying one thing in public, professing one thing publicly, but then doing something different in private. So what they say doesn't match up with what they do. When Jesus describes the Pharisees as hypocrites, his meaning is a bit more nuanced, because his problem isn't so much with what they're doing. They're doing some righteous acts. His problem is that their motives, their heart, doesn't square with what they're doing publicly. It looks good on the outside, but their hearts are corrupt on the inside. And so Jesus calls them hypocrites. This reminds me of something C.S. Lewis wrote. He said, we are half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. And for those of us who struggle with pursuing achievement or practicing our righteousness so that we can impress others, so that we can be seen by others, we are far too easily pleased, far too easily satisfied. If we focus on impressing others, gaining approval from others. Jesus' problem with the Pharisees and the teachers of law is that when they gave to the poor, it wasn't because they really cared about the poor. When they prayed, it wasn't because they were pursuing an intimate relationship with their Father in heaven. When they fasted, it wasn't because they were mourning their sin and expressing repentance. They were doing it all to be seen. They were doing it all as a show, as a game. They went to church to see and to be seen. And they, like many of us, trade in the approval from God for the approval of fallen, fickle human beings. And the more obsessed we become with trying to impress others, the more worried we are about what other people think of us and whether they consider us to be righteous enough and hold us up in high standing because of how holy and righteous we appear, the more we worry about that, the more it can blind us to the much better, more beautiful, more meaningful reality of God in our midst. Because when you become so focused on glorifying yourself, you miss God. In the Gospel of John, this is one of the fundamental differences, Jesus says, between himself and the religious leaders. In John chapter 5, verse 41, he says to them, and they're opposing him, they're criticizing him, they're rejecting him. He says, I do not accept glory from human beings. But I know you, and I know that you do not have the love of God in your hearts. I have come in my Father's name, and you do not accept me. But if someone else comes in his own name, you will accept him. How can you believe, since you accept glory from one another, but do not seek the glory that comes from the only God? Jesus does not seem to be that bothered by the religious leaders' rejection of him. He's not worried about their opinion of how he's doing his ministry and what he's saying in his teachings, because he did not come to please them. He did not come to impress them. The only approval that matters to him is the approval from his Father in heaven. And that's what enables Jesus to keep moving toward the cross. Even as everyone else rejects him, everyone else abandons him, everyone else turns their back on him, no one likes Jesus, and yet Jesus can say, my Father approves of what I'm doing. And for Jesus, that's all he really needs. It's also not a surprise to Jesus that the religious leaders are rejecting him because they are so consumed with glorifying themselves that they can't be bothered with the glory of God in their midst. When we focus so much on impressing other people, we lose sight of God every single time. And so in Matthew 6, to keep us from becoming like the hypocrites who do it all for a show, Jesus calls us to practice what has become known as the discipline of secrecy, in secret. Don't do it for all to see, do it in secret, Jesus says. Don't turn every gift to the poor into a photo op. Do it in secret. Don't pray in such a way that everyone who hears your prayer is impressed with your theological depth and eloquence. Go in your room, close the door, and have a conversation with your Father, because that's what prayer is. It's a conversation between you and your Father, not you and other people. And when you fast, yes, it's not pleasant, but don't telegraph to others how seriously you take your relationship with God by showing them how miserable you are. In fact, if you can, comb your hair, wash your face, don't give anyone even a hint or a clue that you're fasting. And in each of these instances, Jesus insists that these righteous acts, done in secret, not to impress others, but done in the presence of the Lord, will be rewarded by the one who sees all, even what's done in secret, because God doesn't miss a thing. And he invites us to trust that God will reward us for doing the right thing in the right way, at the right time, for the right reason. Well, if you pay careful attention to what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, try to listen to all the bits and pieces and square it all together, then you may pick up on a bit of tension between what Jesus says here in Matthew 6, to do it in secret, with something he said earlier in Matthew 5, verse 16. He says at the beginning of the Sermon on the Mount, remember, in the same way, let your light shine before others that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. Okay, which is it, Jesus? Are we supposed to do our good deeds in front of others so they will see them? Or are we supposed to practice our righteousness in secret so only God sees? Which one is it? Well, do you remember a couple of months ago when I told you that the Sermon on the Mount is not a new law from Jesus to be legalistically interpreted and applied? You remember that? Nod your head in the affirmative, even if you don't remember it. Because your approval matters to me. Work with me here. You remember that, and this is a prime illustration for why the Sermon on the Mount can't be legalistically applied. It must be read with wisdom and discernment for different situations, because the resolution to this apparent contradiction in what Jesus is saying is not about the act itself, it's about the motive behind the act. This is in chapter 5. Jesus says, you can do your good deeds, let your light shine before others and they will see it, but you're doing it so that you're pointing them to God and God is being glorified. Matthew chapter 6, he's saying, now don't do your righteous acts. Don't go around doing good deeds with the motive of pointing to yourself and glorifying yourself. It's about the motive. There's nothing wrong or inappropriate with letting our light shine by doing good in the world unless we're doing it not to glorify God, but to glorify ourselves, which means we always have to pay attention not just to what we're doing, but why we're doing it. The motive really does matter. And this is where the discipline of secrecy can be so helpful, because it helps us to evaluate, clarify, and maybe even purify our motives. Because nothing will smoke out our addiction to the approval of others, our compulsive need to impress others, more quickly than the discipline of secrecy. Try it and watch what happens. Practice the discipline of secrecy and pay attention to the symptoms of withdrawal. How badly do you need to let someone else know about the good you're doing? How hard is it to keep it quiet? You've got to let it slip. You're just going to work it into a conversation. Here's what I gave away. Here's how many days in a row I've prayed. Do you know how hard it is to fast for 36 hours? Oh, I didn't mean to say that. It's supposed to be a secret. But now you know. Are you impressed? And it is so hard if you're addicted to the approval of others. Humble brag is a hashtag for a reason. A humble brag is when we find a way to broadcast our accomplishments, our virtues, our achievements by usually cloaking it in false humility or maybe even wrapping it in a complaint. So I'm going to say something that makes you feel sorry for me, but really what I'm doing is bragging. Here's one example. The worst part about losing all this weight is having to shop for new clothes. A humble brag. Oh, poor me. The next one is an actual humble brag from a celebrity posted on her Twitter account. I just stepped on gum. Who spits gum on a red carpet? I mean, this is the Oscars and I'm here and now I've stepped in gum. Okay, this is not a humble brag. This is a boastful brag. Took this picture several years ago. Can't remember where. I hope it wasn't the church parking lot. And if it was, I am sorry. But look on the bright side. You've now been featured in a sermon. You have received your reward in full. The discipline of secrecy can help break our addiction to the approval of others, the need to impress others with our religious acts of devotion. It can also begin to help train our hearts to be in tune with the approval of the only one that matters. Again, try it and see. Just give it a shot. Not every act of generosity has to be publicized. I know there's a time and a place to make a big deal about a big gift for fundraising purposes, but there's also a time and place to keep it secret. Not every service project has to be logged in as service hours on your transcript or listed as a bullet point on your resume to demonstrate to college admission, whatever they are, that you're a well-rounded student. It's okay to do good in secret without adding it to your resume. Not every good deed has to be memorialized with a selfie on social media or a group picture even. See where we were? See what we did? Isn't our church cool? It's okay to do some of it in secret. In his book, The Spirit of the Disciplines, Dallas Willard says, few things are more important in stabilizing our walk of faith than this discipline. Because in the practice of secrecy, we experience a continuing relationship with God independent of the opinions of others. Our relationship with God is not connected to what other people think of us, he says. This is what the discipline of secrecy teaches us. He goes on to say, secrecy rightly practiced enables us to place our public relations department entirely in the hands of God, who lit our candles so we could be the light of the world. And we allow God to decide when our deeds will be known and when our light will be noticed. I love the idea of letting God be in charge of our public relations department. I love the idea of letting God be in charge of my public relations department for my ministry. I love the idea. I'm not willing to do it, but I love the idea. I would love for one of you to try it and report back to us how it goes. Because it's a marvelous idea rooted in the teachings of Jesus. It's in an age of relentless self-promotion that can leave us enslaved to the opinions and approval of others and can blind us to the glory of God in our midst. Jesus, he invites us to walk with him down a different path. It's a narrow path. Not everybody can go there. It's not an easy path. It's a narrow path. And it's not a path that necessarily leads to public adoration. But it is a path that can lead us to a place and put us in a posture where we can hear these words from our Father in heaven. Well done, good and faithful servant. With you I am pleased. The new year is still young. There is so much good that we can do in the coming months. Let's do some of it in secret. For this is how we learn to value God's approval over all others. For this is how our hearts can be purified so we can see God.